Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Big Show. Yep, we're here, we're back, and I don't know, we're still alive. I think that's a lot you can, that's the best thing you can say about end of January 2026, to be honest.
Check my pulse.
Okay, you're still alive, Tom. Good. Speaking of Tom, how are you doing? Welcome back from your nice vacation. I hope you had an enjoyable time.
We had a really good time in Hawaii. It's hard. We always say it's hard to have a bad time in Hawaii.
Yes. Yeah, I
As a
have to agree.
tourist, anyway.
As a tourist,
As a
anyway.
tourist. It was
Yeah,
nice
I
to
mean,
work.
a lot has to happen that you have a bad time in Hawaii. I mean, I can imagine a couple things, but like yeah. It's pretty difficult.
Weather was good, Biggest decision every day was what beach are we going to today? And oh, and it's
Oh,
whale
what a
season. That's
decision
why
to
I
make.
have a picture of a whale.
Nice.
There were just
Such a
humpback whales everywhere.
tough
Everywhere.
life. Which beach am I going to today?
Well, the one thing that had changed since last time we were there is all the kind of smaller beaches that just had, little parking lots, or you park along the road. It's all paid parking now.
Okay, interesting.
After your tourist
And
dollars.
yeah,
Yeah, they know.
which is fine. I get it. But the problem is you can't do the thing where you go to two or three beaches in a day because it costs you like $100. So you pretty much have to go to one beach a day.
Probably have to go up to the North Shore or something, or it's less touristy, maybe. Maybe.
Maybe because we go to a couple of fairly uncommon beaches on Maui, and they had, anyway, the bright side was it was easier to park
Okay,
because
that's
not as
true.
many people were going.
Fair point. Speaking of hard life, I don't know, UK always hard life, just what I imagine at least. Ian, how are you doing?
Me, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. It's the end of another week. It's the end of me. And the end of a working week. Oh, I've been learning things and prattling around with technology. So, all in all, good to be honest. Not teaching this week. I will be next. All the week after. In fact, a couple of weeks, and I'll start classes again. So, yeah, it's all the prep stuff and the organisationy things that we do over these few weeks. And I'm off work tomorrow, which is lovely as well. So my weekend starts here with the big show.
Very cool. That is awesome. Like, I wish I had to wear off work tomorrow. I have a ton of meetings tomorrow.
No, I have none. I'm going to Birmingham, of all places, to the NEC to see a running show. Well, I will be on Saturday and
You're
Sunday.
gonna meet up with Ewan?
I don't know. I might message him actually on
Yeah,
Saturday and
just
see if he's
message him.
around.
Should.
I'll
You
message him and
should.
see if he's around on Saturday if I can,
Yeah.
if I have time. So Saturday I'm
Go
not going to the show, but Sunday I am because my
for a
wife's going
curry with
both
him or
days.
something.
Yeah, I'll go for a beer with him. I'm going to have a good curry on the Friday night. I'm going to a place I've been to before that's quite good. It's owned by a Bollywood celebrity
Ooh, nice.
in Birmingham. I've eaten
Not
there before
sure
once.
I
No. It's called
can.
Asher's. It's called Asher.
Think I've been even with you into that one. Yeah,
Middle town, so it's very good, apparently.
sounds good. And
Not
learning.
his favourite one, which is good. The place he
That
goes
is
to is
actually
good.
yes.
That is very good. But you can't, once you get out of town, then you can't. You find the right Bullwich Triangle. You can't go wrong in Birmingham. There's always something good there.
True. True. Yeah. And I mean, learning is also always a good thing.
Oh
Yeah, anyway, big show, so we should probably just jump right in since we're already quite late. Jump right in and talk about the first story, and a certain person is cheating already because he dropped in the link before we even
yeah.
started. So, Ian, what is your story?
I like to do the first story. I don't know why. I've just got in the habit now. So it gets thrown there quickly. So my story was, I was looking at all the various things that came up this week of this one was interesting as much as there's two stories kind of here than or even three if you want to go there. But there's first story is this week TikTok was formally handed over to its new owners, which is a company which is a combination of good old Larry Ellison and Oracle and a company called Big Lake, isn't it? Is it not Big Lake? Or is it got something
Silver
or other lake?
Lake.
Silver Lake, who are going to now be there, the owners. So that's one part. The second part is the transition and what that's meant. I mean, most people hoped it would just mean more of the same, the short bit on the short video platform. But it appears they've changed terms of service, which has concerned a lot of people regarding their privacy, because things like they may collect data on, this is may, I get Soviets, though they don't say they would, but may, racial origin, citizenship status, sexual orientation, precise GPS location. So a lot of people, it turns out 150% of people that were member, that were already TikTok subscribers have said, no way, no, not doing that. And have quite rightly uninstalled the app from their laptop, their phones. So are we going to see the death of TikTok in the US anyway, even though it, what they hope to save it in the US?
Cause the, in the US, yeah.
Outside it will still be... it's still been entered, run by ByteDance, which is which is a Chinese conglomerate. So that's kind of interesting.
It's always the terms of service. The question is always: is it just because the lawyers had too much power in that company and they just create something, even though they're not going to collect that stuff, or is it real? And the problem in the U.S. right now is normally I'd say they're not going to collect that stuff. Who cares? But these days, you
currently,
can't say that.
Currently, I'm not not take a chance on that. No. That's not happening.
No, but even before, I mean, like political things aside, even before, we know that companies have sold or usually collect that data not for their own benefit, but to sell it. And do you want your sexual preferences and your whatever information sold to advertisers and whatever? I don't think I would.
And the other question is, why, you know, in all the algorithms that a company uses in order to collect certain data, gives you some insight into, like, their algorithmic feed.
Yeah. I mean...
Because that's the first use, in addition to just selling the data, which you're probably right, they do.
But
they're trying to optimize their... algorithm to feed you the videos that they think will keep you engaged.
So but here's the thing, why do they need to collect that information anyway? Because I'm pretty sure
they don't need
by just watching what you're watching and just collecting that, they probably know more about you than you want. They probably know more things than they even asked in that thing.
Right, but I wonder if they have some sort of, they probably do have some sort of profile that they, based on what you watch, they keep updating your profile information in some sort of database about you.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And so, but they can make inferences about what the video you watch, because if you watch one on animal rights, you might then tag you for seeing further videos about that, and you're also a supporter of animal rights protesting.
Yeah.
They watch you watch stuff on climate change. Again, they make the same connections, regardless whether you clicked on it by accident or, you know, so it's, they build a picture of you, the individual, without even knowing very much about you. And then potentially that can either be used nefariously or the other way, you watch pictures of cats, you'll see adverts for cat food.
Yeah.
You know, it's, it comes to different ways. Regardless, I still don't want to get it.
I always notice when I travel, you know, so I was in Hawaii, and a week after I come back from Hawaii, I still see in my Google News feed articles, local lottery articles about Maui.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's not a coincidence.
Of course not.
Again, equally, when I go to Bucharest and when I go to, when I've been out of the States, a couple of days when I come back, I'm still getting the old story. Or even if I've been to a different part of the UK, the local news feed will come in the Google one just the same.
I still get stuff for Lisbon right now. And it's been over a month that I'm back. I'm still getting stuff, news for Lisbon on Reddit and stuff. So, yes.
Well, and of course, with TikTok, everybody is so concerned because of the ownership now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's still 25% owned by ByteDance, right? I think it's 25%. So.
Yeah.
Well, it's not really, the funny thing is, it's not really clear what the agreement is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some speculation, like in terms of the revenue that's collected, there's some speculation that ByteDance is still getting most of that money.
Which would make sense, right? Because they still provide the servers and they still provide the software and whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
So the question is,
What changed?
What does it mean? What changed?
Exactly. No, that's exactly.
You look at the board of directors and stuff, it's filled with, you know, I think the CEO is still a ByteDance person. The chairman of the board.
I think so, something like that, yeah. No, wait a second. Isn't that the Oracle guy now?
I don't know what...
Certainly they have a new board.
But the people on the board are very similar
no,
to
as
what
far,
it was before.
As far as I know, ByteDance only has one board seat. So that did change.
Right.
Yeah, and as far as I know, Larry Ellison might be on the board. He might be the chairman. He's definitely not the CEO, so I don't know who the CEO is.
Right. But...
Three managing investors, cloud computing giant Oracle, private equity group Silver Lake, and an Abu Dhabi investment company, MGX. Each hold 15%. That's what it says here. So there's no controlling interest for any of those.
Yeah.
So the question a lot of Americans are asking is, are you more worried about TikTok collecting your data when it was owned by Chinese or when it was owned by Larry Ellison?
Okay, I cannot speak for the US. For me, actually, I think the US right now.
Yeah,
I'm more
so
concerned.
The Oracle the guy, current, the Oracle guy the seems to be more concerning.
Right.
Yeah.
Michael Dell apparently is in on this. So
yeah. That
Adam Pressler, Will Ferrell have been appointed CEO and CSO. And Lucio, who's on the venture, is also the global person, is also involved.
Yeah.
That's what we've been told anyway. Looking at the Reuters article about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know who asked the question, like, is this the end of TikTok in the US? And it's a difficult question. It's a really difficult question because on one hand, I've seen a ton of complaints about this TikTok not working as it used to. Like, I mean, it was down at some point because they had some problems with data centers and like, even if it was working, it just wasn't as good and whatever. I mean, that might be a temporary issue and then it gets resolved and everybody is fine. But I'm like, if that persists and if people don't like either don't make the money they were making before or don't get the clout that they wanted or don't, on the user side, don't see the things they wanted to see or they were expecting to see, that can happen. Otherwise, I don't think so because it's just too big and too ingrained in certain like parts of the country.
Yeah, most of the people aren't going to leave for political reasons. It'll be the more practical reasons, like you laid out. And I mean, think about what is the lifespan of a typical social media leader?
I mean, pretty long unless you're Elon Musk and you destroy it.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, Facebook was big from, 2008 to...
No, way before that. Facebook is older than that.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. Okay, really big, it was maybe mid-2000s. Yeah. Okay, you're right. Mid-2000s, maybe when it was really big.
And it started, I mean, there's still
It's still massive. Yeah.
Yeah, but
even you look at Twitter or X. I mean, started in what was it, 2006, I think.
Six, seven,
yes. I mean, is it as big as it used to? No. Is it still freaking big? Yes.
Right.
Like, I mean, I think it's now the second biggest, not the biggest social network because. Who took over? Oh, Threads took over, yes. Threads is actually bigger now. Threads and Instagram and whatever. But like, it is still pretty damn big. Like, it has lost some, but it's still massive.
Sure. I think the difference is 5 years ago when you said, what's social media? It's like, oh, it's Twitter. Everybody uses Twitter.
Yeah,
but that's not the answer anymore.
Yeah, but I'm sure, if Elon hadn't taken over, I think it would still be the biggest. It might have lost some because you know, like things go, like TikTok was coming up and Instagram, whatever. So I think some migration was inevitable, but I think it would still be the biggest. I think it didn't help like that it was, that it ended up being what it is.
Yeah, Twitter definitely I think could have would I think yeah, would continue was, to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like
the
Facebook.
It was, but.
Yeah. Just like Facebook. I mean, Facebook hasn't, I mean, despite everything, like, Facebook hasn't really changed. It's still massive. It's still big. It has normal ups and downs, but it's still massive. Like, it's just like a lot of people at some point moved on, but it's been around for long enough that that doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah,
what it's about the competitors for the sake of your short video form? Because there are other ones now appearing.
Yeah, but very few.
There was saying that they will start. I mean, Reels and things will be one that will start picking up.
To be honest, I think the migration you're seeing from TikTok is mostly Instagram, maybe a little bit YouTube Shorts. Like there is like Loops and whatever there is like other competitors, but I think. My feeling is they don't really stand a chance anymore because, like, those three have, I mean, in general, so much, like, mind share and whatever. So unless they unless they pull an Elon, I think they're just going to be there. Like, they just, it's just the big three benefiting. Like, if one of them falters, the other two just benefit, and that's it.
Right. Like, plus, it's the generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it TikTok is so heavily... towards younger generation,
yeah,
that group of 15-year-olds is gonna keep using TikTok. You know, there's some massive problem. They're gonna keep using TikTok for the next 10 years.
Yeah. I mean,
Facebook. Yeah. You know, it's people over 60 that are using Facebook, and over the next 10 years,
50 to 60.
Snapchat survives weirdly because it's some of the only ways. A couple of my kids' friends can
it's a TikTok before TikTok, right? There's certain generation that of people that grew up on Snapchat and use Snapchat because of that. And I said eventually people might move and it might die or go away. Like, I mean, other services eventually also died, like MySpace, for example, and ICQ was big. I mean, was that a social network? Kind of. Stuff like that. So it's not that it lasts forever. Like, people do sometimes migrate to other services, but like vastly.
Well, then,
I think what happens is a new one comes up for a new generation.
Yes. And it tends to be a spike, you know, like when a bunch of people left Twitter and went to Mastodon when Elon bought it, but it was a spike. Mm-hmm. It didn't sustain.
That it was a spike and a small one, really.
Yeah, and even this one is there was TikTok saw 150 a surge in deletions of 150%. That means compared to deletions 2 weeks ago, it's 1.5 times more.
But even
that could be 10. They
exactly. Exactly. If I mean, how many deletions do they already get? Like, how many people really delete their accounts? If it's like as you said, 10 in a week. Then now this week it was 15. Wow. Right. Yeah, they don't do it.
When you make sense of the numbers, it kind of sometimes goes, oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's 1,000, that's 1,500, right? Something like that. Yeah. So, like, I don't think it is that much, to be honest. Like, it's like, if it was like, oh, it went up 1,000% or 10,000% or whatever, okay, now we're talking about a big number. 15 or 150.
I think if it turns out that somebody like the Trumpers use TikTok data to go arrest a bunch of people, that would have an impact.
And probably is happening. I mean, they can just subpoena it. But the problem is usually that doesn't get talked about. Because, you know, even that is sealed then usually. I mean, these days it might just leak because, you know. Yeah, as I said, like, I mean, there was in the news, like, the discussion, like, people were saying, oh, the FBI got decryption keys for, what was it? Was it called? Not FiveVault, BitLocker for Microsoft. BitLocker. And I was like, yeah, how is that a surprise? They get a subpoena, they have to hand over the data. That's by law how it is. And if they have the key, they have to hand it over. It's very simple. It's data.
Right.
Anything.
Hand it over, even if it's proprietary information to the business, and
if they have a warrant.
If they have a warrant signed by a judge, that says you have to hand over all data related to this one user, then they hand over all the data related to this one user. If that includes a encryption key because Microsoft isn't storing it in a way that they cannot be accessed, then that's what happens.
Yep.
I mean, that is on them to like make it open and available, yes. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Proton drive is an idea. Start thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, others do that too. I mean, Apple has or can have also your firewall keys. As far as I know, they're encrypted these days, end to end.
Yeah.
But not a guarantee.
If you're in the right part of the world, they're encrypted.
That's true, yes.
In the UK, they took away the option for us to turn that on.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think keychain is always encrypted end to end.
There was an extra step of security we could check.
Yeah.
If you've got an iPhone in the other part, you can't do that here anymore.
Yeah, okay. But as I said, like, I mean, if you do that, and I said the default is in a lot of places because of people who don't know you how to use their computers or lose stuff or whatever. I mean, it can happen to anybody that you lose something. And then their support can at least help out. They do that and they enable it by default. So,
I think their thinking was it wasn't malicious. It was because the average user would never turn it on, right?
Mm-hmm. It's just practical.
I mean, I used to, when at work with BitLock, we used to write down the keys on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You
know, when it first.
Yeah. I mean, work machines are work machines anyway. I mean, our work machines, for example, I know, I mean, if you have Intune, for example, it does send them to Microsoft.
Right.
So. That is definitely available. Yeah, but anyway, that wasn't the story. Like, it was just, yeah. But we have a different story from Tom.
My story is about the memory pricing. So we've all heard about
that. Oh, yeah.
What do they call it? The RAM apocalypse or something?
Yes.
And the idea is that because of all the AI demand is making RAM prices skyrocket.
Mm-hmm.
And this place, it's a site called PC Part Picker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I'd ever heard of it. It's a great site, though.
It's great. I've used it. You can configure, like, I used it actually to configure the server that's behind me. Because you can basically collect all the parts together and you get a part list, and it's really cool.
Right, yeah, it's really good, good site for that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So if you're building a PC, it's a great place to be. But they have some graphs on pricing of different kinds of memory, you know, different kinds of DDR4 and 5. And the price jumps just blew me away. So the DDR4 is older stuff. So as you can imagine, the AI people want the fastest RAM possible. So it seems like the price spikes have really hit DDR5. In the bigger modules of DDR5. And for example, DDR5 average pricing since, say, September has gone up 4x, the average price. 4x in basically 3 months.
Two 16 gig modules gone from, I switched to UK pounds so I get a better in the head comparison, gone for just over £100 in 2024 to today. £300.
Right.
Yeah. 300%.
It's not even 2024. Insane. It's late 2025.
Yes.
The price is relatively stable for the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, mid 2025, or you can see on the site, like, still like June 25, it's still relatively flat.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden.
You know, when people are talking about RAM prices, I'm thinking, okay, you know, 30-40% increases. Mm-hmm. Not 300%.
Yeah, there's like one here, the 2x16 gigabits DDR4 3200, which went from, I don't know what that is, like 80 maybe, 85 to like over, like whatever, 260, something like that.
Right.
From June to basically January.
Right.
So June last year to January this year.
And I guess if you thought about the, you know, the supply chain and buying a PC, for example, the people that were building the PC that you want to buy today were probably building it in September or October. And then you think about their contracts and whatever. So the delay from the price spike to when you feel it is probably 4 to 6 months, I would
say. Something like that, yeah.
which means basically we're going to start feeling it now.
Yeah. It depends a little bit. It depends a little bit which market you're in and what you're doing. I mean, your individual server, for example, or your individual PC, if you create your own, you will probably feel it more or less immediately because you're buying on the open market.
You're buying now.
Yeah. If you're like, we talked to Dell, for example, we're feeling it there as well already, because if you order Dell hardware right now, that is also on the market. They're ordering it like build to order because those are custom systems.
Right.
Feeling that as well. So it depends a little bit, but like the big contracts, the big manufacturers, like if they're mass producing something, for example, they have longer term, like sometimes even more than 4 to 6 months. They sometimes might have a year or two.
Right. Maybe but what more. If their contract with Hynix ended in August and they had to renegotiate it in September, you know?
Actually, if they did it in September, they might have been lucky. What if they have to renegotiate it now?
Now,
that's bad.
January.
Now we have to renegotiate. Shit.
And the other interesting thing I'm reading about the knock-on effects of this is that companies like Hynix and Samsung are redirecting a lot of capacity from flash NAND factories to DRAM because they're making so much money on DRAM.
Yeah.
Which guess what? Means that flash memory is going to start costing more.
Yeah, but I mean that is also how like markets work, right? Where there is more money to be made, people go, and that increases capacity. That brings down the prices again because then do you have more availability again, stuff like that. So that's pretty normal. But yes, you're right. It does have effects on other parts where they were producing, but sometimes also not so much. Like maybe they didn't have to produce anyway that much.
Yeah, it's always, it depends on the characteristics of the products and how they're manufactured. Yes. And in this case, something like reconfiguring a NAND fab to do DRAM can take 6-7 months. And they've been doing that for six or 7 months. So it takes a lot of time to either add more capacity or switch capacity.
Yeah. Yeah,
it can take months and years.
Yeah, and I mean the other effect is also, if RAM prices increase and maybe companies like the one I work for decide not to order hardware because they're like that's just too expensive, then you don't need the other parts either, right? It's not just unless you're upgrading RAM, you don't just order RAM. Like usually it's a whole system, so that also means that does free up some capacity in the other supply chains. Or the other parts, right?
Yeah, except, you know, the people building AI data centers are still buying CPUs and
that's true.
And Ethernet chips and switches and things.
Yeah, but they're buying whatever they
different.
Can.
It's different than what you're buying for for your employees.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I mean, who was it? We had last year the story where someone left the consumer market.
Crucial.
Crucial.
I was thinking of that. Crucial is one of that story I brought. Mm-hmm. They've left the world of consumer behind. They just it's not worth. I can make far more money.
Yeah, for building AI.
Building
AI chips.
The highest bidder for the AI chips.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but as I said, like it's probably a little bit. I mean, the demand from the AI companies or whatever is probably growing and high, but if the rest of the market cools down a little bit, that does help here or there. Right, so that I mean it's also like it's not infinite. Like you can just say, well, I'm not buying because what are you doing then? I mean there's a reason you wanted to buy something. It's not that I have money lying around, let's buy a server I don't need. Well, some people do that, but mostly that doesn't happen.
But you know, like around the edges, just for the sort of non-server PCs that you buy for employees. Mm-hmm. In tough times, you say, well, instead of replacing your laptop every 3 years, we're going to do it every
year. Yeah, we're going to push it a year.
Yeah,
exactly. That does happen. Like, or do what we're considering and say, okay, instead of buying our own hardware, we're going to an existing provider that already has the hardware, for example. go to an AWS or an Azure or whatever, OVH in Europe or whatever, and just go there.
Right.
Shift, make it their problem.
Is it going to have an effect on consumer electronics? phones and phones particularly more than any more that
probably
type of
not
RAM. Is that the same, are they the same level of module that they use in the AI stuff that you use in your phone, say, or even the, the bit of flash RAM that sits in the say the, in the dashboard of your car these days?
Yeah,
because there'll be all that kind of RAM that runs.
Memory chips are memory chips.
Yeah.
And what a company like Hynix has to figure out is, I have 10 manufacturing lines for DRAM. Which products, which die am I going to manufacture? And do I manufacture die for iPhones, RAMs? Or do I manufacture die for DDR5 for servers? So they do have to make a choice about this kind of stuff. Yeah. But in a lot of cases, the die are the same. The product is the same.
Yeah, but as you said,
it's just the supply.
But as you said, like if they shift because they can make more money on the other side, it doesn't have an effect. Yeah. But that's where the long term contracts of a lot of companies come in, like Apple, like Samsung, whatever. I mean, Samsung has it in house mostly, but they have long term contracts, and those have to be fulfilled. Like that's simply not an option.
Yeah.
So they have to ensure that they at least fulfill those longer term contracts still. So they can just shift to DDR5.
Yeah, you won't see it necessarily in the short term. Everything's got a time lag.
Yes.
To it, but, you know,
eventually.
I would doubt that most of those contracts are more than maybe 1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Apple does it a little bit longer, but my guess is a lot of those contracts are, you know, 6 months because.
Yeah.
When memory prices are going down, you don't want to be locked into a contract that
or when there's
so you have to kind of stagger
or if there's new memory available or if you want a certain memory for a new product or whatever and then you have a new contract like stuff like that so and not everybody is in the same like negotiation like power position as Apple right
and Apple probably has 10 different contracts with Hynix for memory. They don't just have one big contract.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, in the short term, at least what we're hearing, no measurable impacts, at least on the, let's say, average consumer product.
Right.
But delayed, possible.
Yeah. Because we saw that, didn't we, a few years ago, CPUs and RAM again were delayed production of cars and things.
Yeah, or we had hard drives like the, what was that? Late tens, I think, where we had the floods in, was it Thailand? Then hard drives were really expensive all of a sudden.
Thailand.
Yeah, and that did have eventually a small effect. Took a while, but it did. Yeah, we'll have to watch this. It's really interesting. Good story. And I'm actually bringing a related story that I thought Tommy would bring, but you didn't, because you wanted to talk about the more interesting one, which was memory pricing. Microsoft has announced new chips for AI, of course, because for what else? So it's a trend, right? A lot of companies are using their internal chips like to kind of lower reliance on NVIDIA, right? NVIDIA is still, I mean, that's why their market shares is so big because they're basically supplying most of the AI world right now with their chips. But a lot of companies are now, like, they don't want to be reliant on one company because that is pretty dangerous, as we've seen in the past, for multiple reasons. One, NVIDIA has a lot of power with that. But from the other, if NVIDIA falters, like Intel did, for example, and cannot produce what they need, then yes, you're still dependent on them. If something happens with their manufacturing or whatever, and they can't produce what you need, then you're screwed. Like, or the chips aren't as good as they should be, or have any other fault. So Microsoft is doing exactly that. What everybody else is doing, like Apple and so on. Samsung, I think, is doing the same thing. They've released a new chip. It's the Maya 200. So there was the 100 was released 3 years ago, I think. Yeah, it says here 2023. It's a chip specifically designed for AI. So it's not a general compute chip. It's one for like tuned or like designed for so-called inference, which is running the model. It's not training the model, but like really just operating it as efficiently as possible. It has over 100 billion with a B transistors. So that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot. I mean, it's probably not something you need at home. Well, you never know, but probably not. I mean, Atlee probably does, but not the normal person. Hey, I should ask him whether he ordered any of them. Delivering about 10 petaflops, it says here, in 4-bit precision and about 5 and 8-bit. Well, kind of makes sense. Half of it, of course. Ish.
Yeah.
Not usually not one-to-one, but like... Yeah, but yeah, it's a cool chip. Can be used, of course, for any kind of AI business. It can run today's largest models. Of course, that will change, because it always does. There's just some headroom in the chip, but you know, when there's capacity, then we also figure out ways to use it and to exceed it. Usually, then we need bigger chips.
But can it run Doom? That's the question. Can I run Doom on it?
I bet you cannot just run Doom. Probably. You can probably run about a billion times Doom or something. Doom doesn't need that much. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out with all these companies designing their own chips. And as you say, they do it for supply chain reasons and all that.
Yeah.
And cost. Right, they wanna. Amazon is always talking about how the cost per, however you measure performance, power, whatever, is better using instances that use the Amazon
Trainium versus
using NVIDIA.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It has the effect of disaggregating that whole technology. And I wonder the key thing would be from a developer point of view, you don't want the customers to have to modify their workflows and software and stuff to switch if it's too much to do it, they're not going to switch.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, ideally you don't care from like when you have your models and whatever, you just don't care. You're like, okay, I'm using whatever Azure data centers and it runs and it there, and I'm using Amazon, and it just works there. And I like probably use both because you know redundancies and so on, and it just works. And that's what they have. That's really what they have to work on.
So is that possible with inference engines? That the modification to run a Microsoft chip versus NVIDIA is minimal or zero?
Possible, yes, I would say. I mean,
it's just C code, right?
Yeah, I mean, we have it in other chips these days, right? We have x86, and it doesn't matter whether you're running an AMD chip or an Intel chip or whatever, it runs x86 instruction sets, for example, for CPUs.
Yeah, but those have the same, they have the same ISAs, right?
Yeah.
The
yeah,
question is, do these have the same these instruction as well. Sets?
Yeah, that's or is there some higher like higher level translation layer that just like manages that for you and you don't even notice, right? It's C code and it just does it for you. Yeah, that is the big question. Like I actually also don't know.
But even if you had to recompile, right? It was the same high level language, but you had to recompile. That's a pain in the ass, right?
The recompiling, probably not. Could be, depends on the complexity, but probably not. I think the problem is more, what if there are subtle small differences and bugs and whatever, and then it behaves slightly differently, and that might be a problem. And then figuring that out in different on different chips, it behaves differently, and why does it do that, and how to fix it, and whatever, that is a pain.
Well, can you imagine trying to debug that with AI inferencing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we still don't know how it works, so yeah.
Right, that would be really hard to debug.
Yeah, I mean, Google has the TPU, the Tensor Processing Units, for example. They're not sold, but you can have them through their cloud. Amazon has Trainium. But we'll see. But I think in general, right now, especially this kind of early-ish in the game, kind of still early, I would say. It's probably good to have competition. Like push the limit, see what's possible, see what works and what doesn't.
That's probably the most important thing about this trend.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, and we don't want to leave that to NVIDIA just because they already had GPUs and it was quite easy for them to be used for this. I mean, this also, I mean, to be fair, that's also a trend, right? I mean, originally we started with CPUs, and then eventually we figured out, GPUs are actually way better for
really
stuff like
this,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we used GPUs, and remember, the GPU prices exploded because of that.
Right.
Now we have specialized chips that are designed for what we need, right? And that is a massive difference. So the poor gamers can have their graphics cards back. Actually, they
They're
can't.
They can't. They look at NVIDIA isn't going to be making chips.
Exactly.
They've got other places.
Exactly. That's the problem. The market is basically going where's the most money, and the most money is not in gamers and their gaming chips. It's in AI chips right now.
And they can't afford the RAM either.
Yeah, well, that's true. That is definitely also
they
true.
Can't play the
game. Yeah, that's also true. And I mean, a lot of graphics cards also need RAM, right? So.
Yep.
Well, that will affect surely PlayStations and the like as well,
yep.
And Xboxes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Again, they need the graphics and the
yep.
RAMs.
Yeah. Do you know what's not affected?
No.
Our sponsor. AWE Technologies, they already have the technology. They don't need RAM, as far as I know, at least. I don't know. I haven't asked. So it's a really cool company. They sponsor our servers, so thanks for that. And they do, I would say, construction site monitoring or event like space monitoring as well. I've seen like videos where they were at like some outdoor concert or festival or something and were monitoring environmental factors like noise levels and pollution, whatever. But for the most part, their construction site, rail especially, recently, last whatever, how many years they've been doing that? I think, is it 5, 6, 7, 8?
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, at least.
It's been a while. Won multiple awards for it, for their Sentry system. It's really cool. Like, I mean, you can like record like videos, what's it called? My brain is not working today. not stop motion. Time lapse. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Time lapse videos. Thank you. My brain is definitely
not working. Stop motion would be cool.
That would be interesting. I mean, you could technically do that as well, right? I know time lapse videos and they have like as I said noise sensors. I think dust, as far as I know, vibration. Stuff like that, and you can have them all around your construction site and like have it all come together in a really, really good and useful like kind of a dashboard and get all the data, and you can analyze your, I mean, it's one, of course, for your environmental monitoring, whatever you're required to do, but it's also for your own processes. You can look at, okay, how efficient was like whatever laying that piece of track, and can we improve the process and stuff like that. So it's actually a pretty cool solution. Really like it. I've like good people behind it with you and Anders and so on. So it's a good solution, mostly in the UK right now, but I know from Ewan, he's open to working anywhere. Like if someone wants to fly him out to, let's say, Austria, I know we're building tunnels here and we're building underground like trains, like metros and whatever. So hey.
Yeah,
or like I've heard Copenhagen has a big project coming up, so maybe that.
Mm-hmm.
He's open to that, and is that he's I mean, literally many years of experience. He's worked on the London Underground quite a lot, but also like
HS2.
Smaller train, like train lines, like independent ones, even stuff like that. So tons of experience with that. So yeah, like go hire him. AWETechnologies.co.uk is the website. So highly recommend. So really good service. And also good service is our live stream. So we have one, live.britishtechnetwork.com is where you go when you want to watch it. And it is literally like YouTube without all that advertisement and selling your data and big American corporations and all of that. It's literally just the videos on the left, the chat is on the right. You can, like when we stream, go watch it. Type in the chat if you want to talk to us. We post the links there. And that's it. So no registration, no fuss, no, hey, we collect your data and sell it, none of that. Actually, I don't think we collect anything with that. It's literally just, yeah, go there, talk to us. We record this very show 7 p.m. UK time on Thursdays. So if you want to join us, head over to live.britishtechnetwork.com and talk to us live. Generates really fun names like the Optimistic Breton, something like that. It generates funny names, but then you can rename, like Wes FL, for example, did. He renamed from that to Wes FL. So just tap the purple button, do that. And if you want, if you don't want to join the live chat and you are like, but I really want to see that PC part picker link, that website that Tom posted earlier, we have a transcript on the website, britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then select today's date, which is the 29th of January, 2026 now. Almost at 5. 2026. Yeah, and then you will see everything we talked about, like the cool things that are coming up. And let's do that. So who has the first cool thing? And that would be Tom. HappyWhale.com.
I'm first.
Yay.
Okay, my cool thing is related to my trip. It's a website called HappyWhale.com. And it's a site that helps identify and track whales.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is if you go and you take some pictures, like one behind me, of a whale's fluke, you know, the fluke is like a fingerprint. They're very unique to every whale. So you take a picture, you upload where you took it, when and where you took it. They search their database to find matches. And, you know, these whales have names, a lot of them. And so they say, oh, the whale that Tom took a picture of on the 23rd of January in Maui is a whale named Jimmy or whatever, and it adds it to Jimmy's database. Yeah, so they keep track of it. Actually, the one behind me, they did identify it, and it had some weird, like, Russian name. What do you call the Russian alphabet? It was a name using the Russian alphabet.
Cyrillic.
Thank you. And I can't click on it. I don't know how to get my list here. And then since I took pictures of those and submitted it, every time this whale is spotted somewhere, I get a notification, which is kind of interesting. It's basically a crowdsourcing idea to help keep. Help track whales, which is useful for research.
That is actually pretty cool if you're into whales. Or in an area where there is whales, like in Austria, I would say fat chance. If that happens, we have way bigger problems than a whale.
We have a story. That would be
be a massive story if we have whales and all of a sudden in Austria. Like, how did that happen? Did they fall from the sky? Like in a Hitchhiker's Guide. Now, was it Hitchhiker's Guide? One of the books.
Yeah. Completely Hitchhiker's.
Yes.
I think the people from Happy Whales would contact you directly if you submitted a photo from Austria.
Yes. Oh, yes. I mean, that would be a big news story around the world if you had whales all of a sudden here.
Do you have a big enough body of water to keep any in?
No, I think our lakes are all quite small. Okay, there would be one that maybe barely might be big enough. That's the biggest lake in Central Europe. That's Bodensee, Lake Constance, which technically most of it is German and not Austrian. There's a little sliver of Austrian one corner.
Well, there are quite a bit of whales, like whale, you know.
It's also not very deep. So, like, I mean, it is deep-ish, like, what was it, 50 meters or something, in the 70s, something like that. So, hey, as I said, like, a big whale might not be enough. A small one, maybe, okay, could happen. But, I mean, again, the question would be, how the hell did it even get there? It's literally in the middle of the continent. Like, how did it get? I mean, the Rhine does come from or flow through it, basically. But like, it's not as easy to like undetected go up the Rhine somehow. It's also quite shallow in a lot of places. I'm like, yeah. Maybe little tiny baby whale made it up. I don't know.
There's no such thing as a tiny baby whale.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing.
Okay.
Good. Yeah.
I just have this idea, Patrice. We can do a Netflix documentary. We'll take a small whale. We'll have it swim up the Rhine.
Uh huh. Okay. That could
Whales
be
in Austria.
That could be a book, to be honest.
Right.
Whales in Austria. Yeah, okay. Enough of that. Tom, I think you have the next cool thing, if I remember correctly. No, Ian, that was Tom, that was yours. Ian, you have the next one.
And the next cool thing is a song published by Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, yes. That is amazing.
Over the, he wrote the song on Saturday, mm-hmm. recorded it on Sunday, and posted it on Monday. It's called Streets of Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
It's a protest song. About, and he's back to his roots and back to the thing that started the Bruce's sort of raison d'etre, in my view. And I love it a bit, and that's fantastic. And that's all I really have. Is I saw that last night, came up on my feed and went, oh boy, brilliant, utterly brilliant.
Yeah, it was great.
Sounds utterly brilliant. Sounds great, yeah. I love it.
Utterly brilliant.
Absolutely. My cool thing is a book. I put link in. Okay. It's a book. Not 100% sure it's your cup of tea, but might be. It's from a really cool author named Ellie Hazelwood. I think it's a she. I'm not 100% sure. Actually didn't check. But just based on it, how it's written, I would say identified female.
Probably a woman.
Yeah. It's really
science, good love. No, there's no
yeah,
explosions,
see...
but the wrong point for me.
Yeah, it is
spaceships exploding and things
yeah,
like that.
No,
this doesn't work for me.
Yeah, this is a set. This, but I loved it. It's a really. I mean, it's a definitely. I would say not maybe younger adult story. It's like college age, like that, like maybe, well, a little bit like, let's say mid-20s or something. So Olive she's a scientist. She doesn't date, like she's all into like her science. She's a biologist, physicist, I forgot
PhD
actually
candidate.
She's a PhD candidate, but I forgot which field she was in. I think it was biology thing, I want to say, because she did research, like cancer research or something like that. And she dated like a certain, like some guy in her, like in her area, but she like didn't really care and like didn't really like him, and her best friend kind of was into him. So she in order for her best friend to feel comfortable to date that certain person, that Jeremy, she just decides to kiss a random guy in the hallway. Unfortunately, that random guy in the hallway is a known asshole professor, Dr. Adam Carlson. Turns out to be very similar to her, because he's also like not into like social things and whatever. Mostly he's also into his science. And the reason he's an asshole is not that he wants to be, it's like that he just has very high standards when it comes to research. Higher than most students and most people. And what happens after is really interesting, because like, of course it goes deeper from there and turns out to be different than they both thought. I love that combination of kind of sciences and like her finding her way, also both of them kind of growing and figuring out that there is more in life than just work, because that's mostly what they've been into so far. And yeah, kind of turns interesting. Yeah, it's really, really, really well written, I have to say. I loved like how like intelligent it was. It, as I said, you have to be into this kind of genre, because like there is like certain acts are very detailed. Let's put it this way. So it's not porn,
yeah,
but it is very detailed. Like, but if you're into this kind of books, it is, as I said, very well written. She has a couple other books that I've read that are very similar to this, so it's definitely her shtick to write very intelligent, nerdy slash romantic books. So yeah.
Weird thing though, I think listening to a book when you get to those kind of details.
Mm-hmm.
Is a lot weirder than reading it on a page.
Probably, but also a lot more enjoyable.
But there's a disconnect between where you are,
yes,
and what's happening in your ears.
Yes.
Like driving down the motorway.
Yes.
Or, you know, or
being out on a walk.
Hang on, walking the dog. That happened to me once, we're walking the dog.
Yes.
Oh, well, hello. All right. Okay. Yeah. We're going with this. Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I started reading the Backyard Spaceship book that you'd recommended.
Yeah.
That's a load of short stories you stammed together and tried to make a book out of it, isn't it?
No.
It
I mean,
a bit like it. There are maybe it's lots of little vignettes. It's not.
It starts that way. It does expand. I think the very first book is more like that. Yeah. I think it was even originally.
I'm getting annoyed with it now.
It was originally, I think, even short story, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah. That looks like it's kind of built on a number of.
But I just love the way this works. There's also, what is it called? Rebecca Yarros, what was it called? Empyrean Collection? It's like she's a dragon rider or becomes a dragon rider, and like again also kind of going into this direction of here the love hypothesis book, also same, I would say, age group or same target audience, and that's why I love this one, because I love the other one, so I was like, yeah, this is probably got up my alley. Also has a lot of, as I said, very steamy scenes that get described in a lot of very very, very detailed from a very female perspective, so which is quite interesting. It's not really, it's also here, like it's described from Olive's perspective, not from his perspective. Actually, that's not entirely true, because this book does switch perspective sometimes. So like sometimes she does a certain situation from one perspective, and then she switches and then from the other side, and it looks different all of the sudden. That's really interesting. So it's that very smartly written, very interesting, has some really steamy areas. So I loved it. If that's your thing, that's your book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Best selling, by the way. Number 20 in humor, because it has a lot of funny things that happen.
It's ranked pretty high.
Yeah, that's it. It's it's a couple of years old. BuzzFeed's best summer read of 2021, just saying. Been around for a while. I just discovered it recently because I came from Rebecca Yarros. So, yes. All right. That is our cool thing. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And let's start with Tom to tell us where they can find out more about what you're doing or reach out to you. If you want to talk about whales, where can
it
do?
Whales and ram prices.
Yes, exactly.
You can.
That could be a podcast. Whales and ram prices.
Great idea. You can find me on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social.
Very cool. And Ian, what about you?
Me? You can find me mostly on LinkedIn. My name's Ian Grant, and I work for this company in my headline app. That's the easiest place to find me. Sometimes commenting on stuff in the Slack room, our Slack chat group that's part of the BTN network. Those are the best places to find me. I'm becoming more of a hermit away from social media these days.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, for me, I'm always a good product. We're actually using it as well, just saying. Yeah, you can find out more about me on... Well, I'm here every week on the Big Show, the Mac Show. So tomorrow you will hear from me again. I think Jeff is back unless he's sick. He's out sick, could be. He got a sick note for today, so it's okay.
He definitely got
a sick note for today, but I don't know about tomorrow. Anyway, Big Show, Mac Show on Thursdays and on Fridays. Everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com. You find there the social media links, the podcast, the projects, and the occasional blog post. An occasional means once every whatever 4 years. And I just posted one, I think 2 weeks ago, about the first two episodes of Star Trek Starfleet Academy. And there's now 4 episodes out, and I think I might do another one. I have more thoughts, so we'll see. But anyway, I have, speaking of Stargate, I have a show with a certain Jeff Gamet. And we do, like, I have this really nice mug here. We rewatch retro TV shows together. We've been mostly on a Stargate SG-1 watch. We just wrapped up season 3 of Stargate SG-1 with the recap episode. And I'm not going to tell you exactly what we watch next, but I can tell you that we did watch a different show. I got Jeff again to watch something he has never even considered, never, I think in this case, even heard of. But I'll laugh. It's one of my favorite shows. And we did watch it, and it's really cool. Like, it's not sci-fi. It's not anything like what you would expect. But Jeff actually seemed to have enjoyed it. So it's a good show. So that will be out tomorrow some point. So look for the description, and you will know what it is. And then I would recommend go watch that show if you're interested, and then go listen to that episode. As I said, it was a really left field, out of the blue, but really interesting show. Yeah, and we have one more coming after that. So next week we'll have another different show, also again completely different than what we've watched so far, which Jeff also, I think, enjoyed. But you'll have to wait until next week for that one. British Tech Network, you can find, of course, britishtechnetwork.com. You can find also on Blue Sky at britishtechnetwork.com. Easy peasy. Or at britishtech at techhangout.social on Mastodon. And I think the email address is still britishtech@gmail.com, as far as I remember. So there's that. Send us an email if you want. And with that, thanks for listening. Thank you so much for everything you're doing. Thanks, guys, for being here. And talk to you next week.